Good evening and welcome to episode 15 of Tom Harris USA. I'm Tom Harris. Well, who else would I be? Well, it's not like other people are coming and doing the show. So I have a dilemma. I guess this is a little bit more serious subject than I normally have been getting into. But I found out this afternoon, and it's kind of been nagging at me all day, but I found out this afternoon that a friend of a friend, and it's somebody who knows who I am and I know who they are, but I really don't know the person. This person has had a personal tragedy, and I'm really not sure what to do because it's somebody who I know by reputation and know because they and I have mutual friends. And I want to show my moral support. I want to give some moral support, but I'm basically a stranger to this person. And it's kind of just this weird dilemma that I'm having because I kind of feel like I want to reach out and contact this person and, you know, give them my best wishes and let them know that they're in my thoughts. But on the other hand, they're pretty much a complete stranger to me. So I'm kind of in a dilemma. It's one of those things, and it's just so funny, isn't it? Because as a humanist, my first response is to offer comfort. But there is a certain distance. And even between people who have a similar social circle or whose social circles overlap. And it's hard to know. And I've always been pretty bold about, reaching out and contacting people. And, especially people like old classmates and things who I haven't seen for 30 years. And I've had pretty good luck with that. I a few years ago, when I was actually almost 10 years ago now, I think, I got in contact with a childhood friend who I literally had not talked to for 30 years. And it was kind of I actually kind of researched this, the person and till I kind of had a pretty good idea. I knew who this person was today, and actually did contact him. And it was him. And we've reestablished a friendship. As adults, whereas before we were 11 and 12 years old, and now we're both in our mid 40s, and that was a good experience. So I guess I want to be a nice person and say that this person's in my thoughts, but at the same time I don't want to seem like kind of a creepy stalker. So I guess it's a kind of a dilemma. I guess I'm going to have to think about it. But my impulse right now is to send an email and let this person know that they're my thoughts. And I think that if I bring up this other person we know in common, maybe it'll help. Maybe it won't seem quite so weird. But it is funny. It is funny how these things work, And I guess the worst thing that can happen is that they would take offense, this is none of your business. But, if I had suffered a personal tragedy, if somebody came to me and it's somebody who I knew or knew of, and they came to me and they said, I'm sorry, then, I guess I'd feel grateful. So, I think I might go ahead and contact the person and let them know. But it is one of those things. So I want to go back for a second because I've been talking about movies that were made of comic strips and comic books and graphic novels. And I left one out again. I seem to be falling into a rut here. And I think this is, I'm going to try to make this the last time I visit this subject. Until a new movie comes out maybe. But I forgot to mention American Splendor. And it's a particularly egregious omission because I actually know Harvey Pekar and his wife. And I guess my thought on it is I don't really think of it as a comic book / graphic novel movie, even though it is, I guess technically speaking, as a comic book graphic novel movie. I used to live in Cleveland, as I think I've mentioned on the show before. And during my time in Cleveland, I was acquainted with Harvey and his wife, as well as Toby Radloff, who was one of the people who appeared in the film as himself. The movie is really a very good movie, and I think of the various movies I've talked about, I think technically this is probably one of the best ones. But it's also very kind of very loosely based on this comic book work that, you know, started in the early 70s and has kind of continued up to the present day. And I met Harvey and Joyce about 1996, or no, it had to have been before 96, and then 1994, 1995, not too long after I'd moved to Cleveland from Florida. And I had gone to see them talk about their new upcoming, at that point it was a new book that they had just, you know, had published, and it wasn't yet available in the stores, and it was a book called Our Cancer Year, and was a 200-page graphic novel on dealing with Harvey's fight with cancer, and autobiographical, all, you know, completely true. And I went to go see them on the west side of Cleveland at a place called the Red Star Cafe, and it's a coffee shop and sort of a, you know, countercultural type of place. And I decided to go and see, you know, just for shits and giggles, just go to see what they had to say. So I went over there, and they mentioned during the course of the little, they gave a little talk and talked about the project and putting it together and so forth. And it was very interesting. And during the course of that, they mentioned that they had just received the proof copies of this novel, the graphic novel, and the printer had screwed up big time, and they'd printed 98 pages out of order in this, you know, 200-page book. They decided that, you know, that they had to send copies out to the media, and they were kind of unsure what to do about the problem. And after they were done talking, it occurred to me while they were talking about it that I was in a position that I could actually help them. It would be labor intensive, but I could do it. After the at this point in time when I met them, I was working in the printing industry. I worked in the printing industry for a very long time, actually, and I, from the time I was about 17 years old up until 1996. So I mean, that was a good long time, about 16 years. I'd say maybe 14 and a half years of printing experience and working in a bindery, you know, even longer than that. And I was in a position where I could actually help them. So what I suggested to the Picards was that I would take these proof copies of their book to work with and trim off the bindings, because it was like a square bound paperback book. And I would trim off the bindings of these, and I'd bring them back to them, and they could recollate the books and put the pages in the right order, just so they would have enough to send out to the various media outlets for review. Because this book was coming out, there was a lot of press already over it, and they didn't have any review copies or nothing, and they had interviews scheduled and so forth. And I thought I could help them, so I did. And I went to them after this talk that they gave and offered my assistance. And they were very, very pleased to accept it. And that's what I did. I took the books with me to work. I think there were about, I want to say there were about 20 of them. It might have been more. And I took them to work, and I trimmed off the bindings and put binder clips on them to keep them separate. And, drove back over to the Picard's house. And Joyce and Harvey and I spent a very, very pleasant evening sitting on the living room floor recollating these books. And I was very happy to help them. And the Picards are such nice people, and they're very genuine. They do have a little bit of an attitude sometimes, but that's apparent in the work, and it's apparent in the movie, I think, too. They are very smart people, and they're very work is important, and the causes that they support are very important to them. I would say that they're definitely the liberal activist type. Now, that type doesn't always get along with me very well, but because I do actually kind of fall more in the center of the political spectrum than the Picards do. But it was a lot of fun, and I, you know, talked with Joyce and Harvey a little bit. Harvey was busy doing other things, and Joyce and I did most of the collating and so forth. It was really nice. It was kind of a nice evening. And after that, I did stay in touch with Joyce over email for, I don't know, a year or two. Kind of kept in touch with them. And then when I went off to school in 97, I kind of lost touch with them, and I haven't spoken to them since. I tried contacting them in 2003, which is when American Splendor movie came out, just to kind of find out how they were. But I'm sure, you know, after the movie, they were getting so much email and trying to be contacted to so many people because of the movie that they, I don't know, that I think they'd remember me. I do, especially if I reminded them of, you know, what our shared experiences. But yeah, it's kind of a shame I've fallen out of touch with them. But yeah, I should have mentioned that movie when we were talking about graphic novel films. But in a way, it's kind of not a graphic novel movie because the comic is based on Harvey's life. And I think if Harvey were doing a project like that today, maybe he'd do it as a podcast. Why a comic? Well, I think in the early 70s, that was a way to go. You know, maybe today he wouldn't do a podcast, maybe he would do a podcast or something similar, you know, something in the new media, a blog maybe, and not do a comic book. And that, of course, that would be a real shame, but it's interesting to think about. But I do want to mention the American Splendor movie, and especially for those of you who are outside of the U.S., and I know that I probably have more listeners who are outside of the U.S. than I do inside the U.S. So if you have a chance to watch American Splendor, I definitely would. It's very interesting. I know that it's not everybody's cup of tea, but it is recommended. And so that's a comic book movie that I kind of forgot to mention. So hopefully now I won't think of more comic books series that I forgot to mention. I don't want this to turn into a whole series of shows about comics and graphic novel movies. I just have to remember to try to not be quite so forgetful when it comes to these subjects. I probably should write more stuff down before I do the shows. I do kind of come up with an outline of what I want to talk about, and I don't always stick to that, though, because I quite often will go off on long tangents, and that's just kind of how I am. I can either stick to a subject with, you know, with a lot of research and so forth. Kind of like when I was doing my show on psychic predictions. I had to actually write the predictions and come up with all of the things I was going to talk about. So that actually involved a little bit more work. And the tarot episode is going to be similar. I don't think the tarot episode is going to be the next one. It might be the next one. We'll see. I am still working on it, but I do have a few things I need to work out, like whether or not I want to actually do tarot reading on the show. Now, if I do tarot reading on the show, I could either do it without, you know, a specific person there, or maybe with a specific person, but I would have to arrange that, and I don't really know anybody quite well enough, I think, yet to ask them if they want to have their tarot read by me, knowing full well that I have a very skeptical take on this. But that remains to be determined. If, in fact, there's somebody listening to the show listens to the show within the first few days after it's been posted, the first couple days, if you want me to read your tarot on the air, contact me, and we'll deal with it that way. It's not going to be a confrontational kind of situation, but I am going to discuss in depth my theory of tarot and why people are so attracted to it. So last weekend, Pete and I gave my computer an upgrade. Talk about rapidly changing subjects here from tarot to computers. Yeah, I've had my computer now since 2001. I got it at the same time I moved to Chicago. So actually, in computer terms, my computer's pretty ancient. Now, I have a Dell desktop, and when I bought it back in 2001, it was the top of the line. It had a top of the line, you know, sound and graphics. You know, it was a gaming computer. It was designed for me to play lots of games on. Of course, I wasn't doing things like podcasting back then, and I was using it mainly for email and games, and that's pretty much it. And I guess that's pretty much what I still use it for. I use it a lot more for things like, you know, recording podcasts now. My graphics card was not good enough to play some of the more recent games. Now, granted, this is an 8-year-old computer now. So it's no longer not only the top of the line, but it's now near the bottom of the heap. And so Pete's old desktop was being liquidated, and he was going to, I guess, get rid of it. So he gave me the graphics card from that computer, which he had bought separately from the computer and upgraded himself. Now, as far as, you know, capability goes, it's not a huge step above what I had before. It is better than the card I had. And so I can get, I'm guessing, you know, just by swapping out this card, I can get another maybe year or two out of this desktop before I need to replace it, before the technology has so far outstripped this computer that I can't possibly upgrade it anymore. That's one of the most annoying things about computers, though, isn't it? I know a lot of people, they replace their computer every 2 or 3 years. But I've had this one for a good long time, and it's almost one of the longest times I've actually had a computer. And I've had a computer for a long time now. I go back to 1982. If you can remember that far back, and Pete would be very quick to remind me that that was 4 years before he was born. But 1982, I had my first computer. And it was a TI-99-4A. Oh, God. It had a tape drive. And it wasn't, you know, like a computer tape drive. It was like a personal cassette recorder that you would have actual cassette tapes, and that was how you saved everything. You know, there was no hard drive. It was, you know, just kind of a curiosity. I think it cost $200, which was a fortune at the time. To me, it was a fortune because I had a crappy job working in a drugstore. Was a newlywed, and that was sort of our first foray into computers. And it was, a fairly short time before we realized, gosh, you know, this computer really doesn't do much. And I remember having it hooked up to the television in the living room and sitting on the floor. The internet, of course, existed then, but I had not yet encountered it myself. So after we had that computer probably for 6 or 8 months. It wasn't a real long time. Then we got a Commodore 64. And the Commodore we had for a good long time, and I think probably still the Commodore we had for the longest time, because we got it in 83, and I had it right up until 92 or thereabouts. At that point, yeah, I used the Commodore for word processing and games mainly. And I also that was my first foray into bulletin board services, or BBSs. And that's kind of a quaint memory now for most people, that used to be that you would have to, you know, there was no World Wide Web at that point. So people would set up bulletin boards on a computer in their own house, and they would have a computer that was dedicated to running this computer bulletin board service. And people would log in using a modem. My first modem was a 300 baud modem. Can you believe that? And 1200 baud was about the fastest you could get. It was hugely faster than what I had. And I had a borrowed 300 baud modem. I borrowed it from my brother. And I used to log on to these local bulletin boards in Southwest Florida. And there were a bunch of them. And the first one I logged on to, I think, was Utopia. That was sort of my first little community that I was part of online. And it was like magic to me, you know, being able to dial the phone or have the computer dial the phone for you. And then being able to talk over the computer to somebody else. That was like magic. My brother was really kind of the one who got me started in that. But it was so cool, and I made a lot of friends that way. And a lot of the friends that I had in the Toasty Fry Co-op, which I talked about a couple shows ago, were people who I initially had met over the computer. And, of course, the computer remains a very big part of my life today. And I met my boyfriend over the computer. I've met a lot of people. I've met a lot of the people I know from podcasting over the computer. So it's been, you know, for as far as my social life, it's been huge. You know, we had that Commodore for a good long time. And I think mainly we used it for games. I was spent a lot of time playing these very simple games that, you know, seem comical now. My ex-wife is a writer, and she wrote entire novels on that Commodore 64. You know, saving them on 5-inch floppy disks. Gosh, yeah, it's nostalgia. And then later on, then probably in 1991-1992-ish, right before I moved back to Ohio, I got an Amiga. And it was a second-hand Amiga, so it wasn't brand new when I got it, but it was a friend of mine who worked for a TV station, and they were using Amigas to do all their graphics. Now, it's an interesting point of trivia. I'm going to get off the subject for it. The early episodes of Babylon 5, the TV series, sci-fi series, I know some of you in Europe might not know the show, but look it up and see if you can find it on DVD. It's an interesting show. They did the early graphics for the special effects on that show on Amigas. So it was a very popular computer, and especially in Europe. I don't think anyone, of course, is using them today, but it was sort of the successor that was hoped to the very successful Commodore 64. But I had the Amiga for about a year or two, and decided at that point, because the World Wide Web had come about in the meantime, and I couldn't get on to the web with my Amiga. It wasn't compatible. It really kind of, you had to have a PC at that point in order to access the World Wide Web. Now, I had been on the internet before that, and even at that point when I had the Amiga, I was it wasn't Usenet, but it was the FidoNet. FidoNet, which was a networked series of message bases, and it may still exist, I don't know, but it was something like Usenet. And you would go in using Gopher servers and all that. I also was a member of the Cleveland Freenet. And the Cleveland Freenet was a bulletin board, but it was a very large bulletin board. It didn't cost anything, hence the name Freenet. And In fact, most of my social circle that I had in Cleveland was the direct result of the Cleveland Freenet. And I, you know, dated people I met on the Freenet. So, yeah, that's a huge number. I still remember. I was CW811 on the Cleveland Freenet. The Freenet closed in the late 90s. It had been superseded. You know, once the web came around and all the traffic went to that, and you know, it was obsolete technology. So, yeah, too bad, so sad. But it moves on. Time moves on, and as the technology improves, so does the equipment that we use. And at that point, I had gotten my first PC. And I still have the PC. It's an IBM Aptiva, circa 1996. And it still works. This thing, I think, is indestructible. I think you could throw it out a window and it would probably still work. I've never had a single bit of problem with the IBM. And I still have the computer sitting here in my living room. And I use it to play Shanghai and the Magic the Gathering RPG that came out way, way back then. For some reason, my current computer won't play that game. It'll glitch, and I haven't mastered running things in Windows 95 mode. The IBM is a Windows 95 machine with a massive 3.2 gig hard drive. I got a lot of use out of it playing games and things, but I still have it. But yeah, what do you do with a computer that has kind of outlived its usefulness? Because I'm looking at now, the computer that I have now, which is 8 years old, going on 9 years old, and this computer is not going to be good for that much longer. I mean, it's going to be obsolete, and you know, the new games and the content is not, it's not going to be able to handle it, and I'm going to have to get a new machine. So I guess it's just the nature of the beast. You get a computer, and then 5 years later, or 8 years later, as it may happen, you end up with an overpriced doorstop. But it seems to me that process of becoming an overpriced doorstop is becoming faster and faster all the time. I mean, it took a long time for us to replace the Commodore that we had. I didn't have the Amiga for very long, but it took me several years to replace the IBM. And now I've had this one for 8, going on 9 years. Now, I think the only reason why I've had this computer for that long is because I have upgraded it. I've upgraded the RAM twice and just upgraded the video card. But I think this is going to be it. I don't think I'm going to be able to upgrade this anymore. I'm not handy with computers. And that's one of the reasons why the show doesn't actually have a website yet, is that I'm more of a computer user than a computer programmer. So I don't do HTML. I'm not brilliant with advanced functions. I just want to be able to log on the computer, read my email, play my games, do my shows, and that's kind of how it works with me. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it happens. I suspect that probably in the next 2 or 3 years, at the very longest, I'm going to have to get a new computer. And then the old IBM will just go away, I guess. I don't really have room for it. It has this huge monitor. It's a 17-inch VGA monitor, so, of course, it takes up a whole table. It's enormous. And, I actually splashed out a couple of years ago when I was unemployed. It was really something I couldn't afford, but I'm glad I did it. I got a flat screen, a 19-inch flat screen monitor for the current computer. So it saves. I don't have a very big desk. I have the same desk I had when I was 10 years old. So it's not a very big desk, but I don't need a big desk either. It's a nice sturdy piece of furniture. It's actually almost an antique now, I think. I think my mom and her sister had this desk when they were kids. I don't know. I don't really know how old it is. But having the flat screen monitor has made a huge difference, because the old VGA monitor took up half the desk and I didn't have any room to do anything. And now I can. Now I can do bills at the desk or do paperwork or do my taxes, whatever. And because it's not a very large desk, having the flat screen has been just a godsend. So I'm very, very pleased that I made that investment. So if you folks remember, beginning of the show, I was talking about a dilemma I was having. And I was wondering whether or not I should contact this friend of a friend who recently suffered a loss in their life and offer them my support and let them know that they were in my thoughts. Well, I'm very pleased to say now that the dilemma no longer exists. And before anyone gets too confused, I haven't done the show straight through. And that's normal for me. I don't usually do these shows all in one sitting. I know that, I'm not like Chris Reardon, who can just sit down and go for an hour and not take a break and just do, bash through the show. Occasionally I can do it. I think the last show was like that. I just kind of sat down and did the whole half hour at once. But normally I cut the show down into segments, and the segments can be anywhere from 5 minutes to 10 minutes long. So as I'm speaking right now at the end of the show here, it's Friday evening, but when I started the show, it was in the late afternoon on Thursday. So it just goes to show, I try to do segues between the different segments so that it doesn't seem too obvious that the show is kind of cobbled together out of bits. But that is how I usually do the show. So what I did was, right after I recorded that bit about the dilemma, I did contact the person. I sent the person an email and said, I realize that we don't really know each other, but I've heard about this and you have my support and I'm thinking about you. And I'm very glad I did now, because, it was only a couple hours later this person responded to me and said, thank you so much for your kind wishes, and I appreciate it. And that just goes to show that my first impulse, that impulse to reach out to somebody and offer comfort, that was what I should have just gone with. I should have just done it from the very beginning. I shouldn't worry about what people are going to think. Should just do it. I think that's a good lesson, and it's one that I'm always gonna try to second guess. But you know what? I think it's a good thing to reach out and be supportive of people, even if you don't know them. So I guess that's the lesson for the show. And with that, it's time to wrap it up. This is the end of the show. Comments, questions, please contact me. Harris Podcast tom@gmail.com, or you can write to me directly, tom@tomharrisusa.com. So, from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, this is Tom Harris signing off. I'll see you next time.